All right, so we do have the police officer, the chief of police here. And he talks a little bit about what happened. I just want to get some facts to you, or what the police claim are the facts.
Exclusive interview tonight, which is the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Chief, Care Putney. Chief, thank you very much for being here with us tonight as an unbelievable scene unfold in downtown this evening. Just want to bring our viewers up to date. We haven't yet told them the story of Tremont Scott. They may not know why you're involved and why folks are upset. This is a man who was shot to death by an officer in your department after that officer observed Scott inside a car. Scott exited the car, you say armed with a handgun. He got back into the car. The officers approached the vehicle. They told him to get out of the vehicle, to drop the weapon. Despite those commands, this is your version of it, Scott exited the vehicle armed with a handgun, and that is when he was shot to death. Now, the officer who shot and killed him, Officer Vincent, is black. Keith Lamont Scott was black. And the community in Charlotte tonight believes that this is another example of black lives not mattering. And they also challenge your story that Keith Lamont Scott was armed with a gun, saying, in fact, all he had on him was a book. He was sitting there peacefully with the windows up, waiting to pick up his son, and he was shot down like an animal while sitting in the car. I want to start there with you, Chief, and ask you why you don't believe that's true.
Well, there's your truth, my truth, and the truth. I have to deal in the truth. I have to deal in facts. So the version that you hear from me is based on evidence, is based on testimony that we get from witnesses and the officers there, and it's corroborated with the evidence that we gather there on the scene.
Chief,
so
can I ask you, can you see the monitor? Can you see Fox News right now on a monitor near you?
Yes. No,
okay.
I can see the camera only.
Okay, because what we're seeing now is in Charlotte, an overhead shot, what appears to be canisters of tear gas and people running in and out. Have the officers been ordered to use tear gas to disperse the crowds? Do you know?
Absolutely. That's why I have such limited time. I got to get back to work here, but absolutely, we're trying to disperse the crowd. We've been very patient, but now they've become very aggressive, throwing bottles and so forth at my officers, so it's time for us now to restore order.
Is there any doubt in your mind that there was a gun in the hand of Keith Lamont Scott and that a gun was recovered near him at the scene?
Absolutely no doubt whatsoever, no.
You know, his family, others say the cops planted it.
Okay.
I mean, how do you disprove that, you know? I mean, will the body cameras of the police disprove that?
Well, what I can tell you is everything that we have, all the evidence supports the version that we heard from witnesses, from our officers, and from the evidence that we found on the scene. It's not my job really to dispute anybody's version. We're just going to present the facts and let the justice system run its course, and we'll see how that turns out. But right now, we're just standing on the facts. I'm not fabricating anything. I have nothing to gain for doing something like that. We're just going to stand by the facts that we know.
And we have seen pictures of Keith Lamont Scott's body. We have seen what appears to be a gun right next to his foot and what appears to be an ankle holster on his body, which may have been holding said gun. Chief, just stand by. You may want to hear this, too, but something's happening live on the scene in Charlotte, and our reporter's in the middle of it.
We need to go.
Steve Harrigan.
All right, so let's get to this other, a little bit from this other situation, which I think is radically different. The Tulsa shooting is, it's impossible to look at a shooting scene, a little bit of camera work, and know exactly what happened. But on the other hand, I just don't see, from the little bit that you could see, it wasn't clear that this guy was a threat to the police, which should, you know, or others. He's in the middle of a highway. It looked like out in the middle of nowhere. So I don't think he was a threat to anybody else. But you know, you've got a helicopter flying overhead. Well, let's take a break, and we'll come back for In Reload on this Tulsa. But maybe a bad metaphor there, but we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 629 AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450. 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text. And we do have Ben Rossin at the break of the next hour at 7 o'clock. It's Kelly. Hold on just a second. My board is frozen up.
Oh, okay.
Gosh, dang it. I can't turn off the music until the thing unfreezes. Who is
Can
this?
Can you hear me, though? It's pretty background.
Hey, oh, yeah, this is Duke Ellington. I'm sure people got to be wondering why I'm not turning, you know, gosh dang this thing. So the main computer froze up, so I have to wait until it's the one that has the ads in it. Gosh dang it. Well, we could just, let's do this. Let's just come back and go in there. Hold on a second. And folks, we're back on the air. I've got a wonky machine here that won't, well, there it goes. But anyway, we've got Kathy on the air. Thanks for calling, Kathy. Hope you're well. And what are your thoughts?
Well, on that Charlotte one, what concerns me is that Charlotte has a open carry law where you are allowed, to carry a weapon openly, just like you are in New Mexico. You have to have a permit for concealed carry. But so if he was wearing a gun, he wasn't the one they were looking for. I find that disturbing. I find it disturbing that they're not releasing video. I don't believe, the police can. The only time you see video is when someone's standing by with a cell phone. And a lot of times the police will try to take those cell phones. I find it disturbing that, nobody was wearing any body cameras. And even if they were, the tapes are controlled by the police. They're investigating themselves. There's never been any oversight. And it's basically up to them what they release. And the one in Oklahoma, I'm disturbed that the police are not taught, it appears, to use non-lethal force first to retreat. They absolutely refuse to take a step back.
Yeah.
If I would have followed that man over to the car, I think I might have stepped back and hid behind the car if I thought he was going to shoot me. But the police don't do that.
Well, it does make you wonder. I mean, in all of these shootings, and most of them turn out to be justified when all the facts come up, but it just makes you wonder if there's a better way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't want my grandson to be a police officer. I think the work's too dangerous. I can see that when someone is holding a big Bowie knife at you and maybe running towards you, even that would be scary. I would be tempted to shoot too and go home that night to my family and then have to face what comes. But there's got to be a better way. There just simply has to be a better way. And I think it's in the kind of people they recruit, and it's the training they get when they're in their academies. Why are they taught to escalate? They never back down. Would it hurt to step back and reevaluate
the
situation?
Yeah, but I mean, if you've got a situation to just differentiate between the two, the Tulsa seems like just a tragic mishap that is supposedly this guy's car quit right in the middle of the highway, and then they come up and they've got their emergency equipment on, and then he's out of the we don't see everything, but he's out of the vehicle, and then they come up to him and they get your hands in the air, and he complies and sticks his hands in the air, and then he doesn't do what he's supposed to do after that. But I can see maybe a retreating in a situation like that. But if somebody steps out of a car with a gun in their hand and you're in a populated area, don't the police have to engage with that person?
I've probably would. If I was a police officer, somebody steps out of a car with a gun in their hand. But that's, we don't know that for sure.
Oh, I understand.
Seen any video of that
I understand.
One.
Here is my,
they're not releasing any video.
Kathy, here's my problem. When we talked about Brown, when this young man who's turned out to be very, very large and had just committed this crime had came out and then he rushed the police
right.
officer. All of these facts
right.
come out later, but there was so much lying by the witnesses that it makes me wonder if, you know, there's people screaming from, according to reports, people screaming from the apartment complex in Charlotte, kill the white devils. And, you know, so is that group of people that are unbiased when they're telling their story that the guy's writing a book?
No, probably not. They might be biased by what has happened over the last couple of years and for the black community. I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends don't support Black Lives Matter. I am saying what these people in Black Lives Matter are saying is that just pay attention to what's happening. Black unarmed men are being shot down. There's no reason to shoot down an unarmed man.
No, there is not. There is not. But what if, and this applies to everybody, really, a police officer gives you a command and then you don't follow it. Doesn't that escalate the situation? Doesn't that immediately make the police officer apprehensive and suspicious and
absolutely.
On guard?
Absolutely. And, you know, if the person that police officer is talking to is not armed, then tase that person. If he's armed, you know, my gosh, he probably would have already been shot. Like you said, if he steps out of the car with a gun in your hand, in this day and age, you have to expect the police officer is going to shoot you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how stupid can you get? Put your gun down, lay down on the ground, spread out.
Even on
a simple traffic stop. I've been stopped a couple times. I flip on my lights, I roll down my window, and I stick both hands out the window, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm an old white lady. So if I were a black man, are you kidding me? I'd be down and spread eagle the minute I stepped out of the car if you want to live.
And it seems like if you get out of the car and just sit on the ground, you're not much of a threat at that point. Probably in the mind of the police, you know, or unless they say, you know, they'll tell you a lot of times, do not get out, you know, stay in your car, do not get out of your car.
That's what I've been instructed. Don't get out of the car. So everybody's nervous. The police are nervous. People are nervous. And especially black men are nervous. And if I were a mother that had black boys and teenagers, 20, I would be telling them, just what I'm telling you. Don't mess with it. Get out. Let you do what they say. Make your hands, you know, shown. I would do everything I could. I don't understand why this man continued to disobey the police orders, but I also don't understand why the police couldn't use non-lethal force.
Well, they
on
did.
This man that had his hands in the air.
They did use non-lethal force. They shot him with the taser in defense of the cop that shot him. The only thing I can think of in terms of a defense is maybe she thought that he would. I remember him sticking his hands into the window. Maybe she's
right.
just a Barney
sure
Fife. You know, maybe she's just a complete nincompoop. She fantasizes that he's pulling a gun out, and when he gets tased, she also shoots. But it is terrible to see someone in a non-threatening situation without a gun get shot down like that. That gives life to the whole movement, you know?
It does. It does. And yet, if I would have been that police officer and that man continued to walk toward the car and he reached inside after he's been told to get down, to stop, what do you think he's getting? I guess somewhere in your mind you're thinking, what is he pulling out of that car?
What is he pulling out when I told him to stop and just
right.
not move? That can't be positive.
I see both sides of it, and it seems difficult on both sides. I don't know. I think the police, I didn't know he had been tased. I thought he had just simply been shot. I never saw him go down tased. So I thought he simply walked over there, and she shot him.
Yeah, well, I think that he gets tased And almost immediately she shoots, and then she screams, "Shots fired!" I almost thought maybe she just lost it. Maybe it was a super high stress situation in her mind, and she's fighting for her life. And maybe for everybody else, it's kind of, you know, a semi not too unusual situation. But there are certain people that shouldn't be on the streets that are in the police force that should be, you know, doing paperwork. You know,
maybe she was 2 years on the force, so maybe, and she was a small woman. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I'd like to support the police because they're really the only ones that can get rid of bad cops. But I don't think this is a bad cop situation. I think it's more of a way they were trained. There's four of them there. They could have backed off. They could have reevaluated. And this wasn't a bank robber or somebody like that. It was somebody that hadn't done anything.
Yeah, and I mean, we
try to look at both sides. So
I understand. Okay.
I don't know what the answer is.
Thanks for the call, Kathy.
Uh-huh.
Have a good day. All right, bye. And I just got a text. Just wanted to interject something. If the cops carry a baton, pepper spray, and a taser, why is the first weapon that a police officer chose is his gun? Well, it was her gun. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say we don't know anything about it because we've got the video, and the video leads me to believe that there is going to be, after an inquiry, there could quite possibly be a prosecution. Just because you're a cop doesn't mean that every time you use your gun is justified. And, you know, maybe they need to do a better job of, you know, checking these people. Is it possible in an effort to have a diverse police force that they brought this lady on? Maybe there weren't a lot. I'm just kind of speculating here. Maybe there were not a lot of recruits, and she was one of the recruits, and she got stuck on the, in the cruise or in the patrol, and maybe she just didn't have what it took to be a good, you know, maybe she's psychologically weak or whatever. 6:41. We'll take a break here, and we'll be right back. We're gonna get into the Tulsa shooting a little more. All right. So I get into this other one, this other shooting a little bit more, but I just wanted to mention something. And somebody had, I didn't have the text machine yesterday, but somebody had texted in, is Ms. Soles a Democrat? I assume that based on her colorful language, how many workers were on the street? Sounds to me like they got a paid vacation, government waste. She said, let's talk about that and see where we should be cutting waste. So anyway, I just wanted to say something about her coming on. And she's a real nice lady. She did say something about people walking on the street. And then I made I asked her a question about something that apparently one of her staff said sounded like I was accusing her of street walking to fundraise when the government shutdown went down. So apologies on that. But I wanted to just bring something up and just kind of throw it out there for you to think about. You know, somebody comes on the show and they're a Democrat. And, you know, that's the only show in town, so I want to make it as accessible to everybody as possible. And if somebody comes on the show and they're a Democrat, it goes without saying that they're, you know, support either in favor of abortion or, as she said, I don't presume to block abortion for somebody else, which is, I guess maybe you could say kind of more of a libertarian line on that. But so then the question is, how long should we get into abortion and how deep and gay marriage, stuff like that. Now, here's the question. And I was reading an article the other day, and this guy had actually a book, and the guy had said in the book, it was Os Guinness, this great author, and he had said something about sunset arguments. Arguments on issues that are already long settled, he called sunset arguments. So if abortion is settled, if gay marriage is settled, it doesn't mean that they're not topics, but my question is, you know, how many minutes, I mean, and I'm totally opposed to abortion, and I think it's evil. And I think all of the arguments that I've heard about abortion are totally lame. You know, some are more interesting than others, but not an excuse or a defense or an argument for it. But having said that, how much time do we want to spend on these issues when we have somebody on the air? Because they're probably, you know, they're probably not going to be working on this stuff. Now, it is possible it could come up in legislation, but you know where they stand. And I think one of the problems with the way that people have done stuff in this country in the last, say, 50 years is a lot of important issues that should have been worked out socially or state by state were taken by the Supreme Court and dealt with, like gay marriage, like abortion. So the argument was never really, you know, argued out. And the opposite of that, an argument that was had in the country was at the root of the Civil War. The Civil War was to a large extent about slavery and some other issues, but that was decisively dealt with. Nobody argues for slavery anymore, but there is going to be in 100 or 500 or 1,000 years, if abortion is still legal, there's still going to be arguments about it because we didn't go about it the right way and we misused the Supreme Court. Just my opinion, but all right. I got a little bit behind because my machine was stuck, the one with the ads in it. So I've got a little, let's break it up a little bit here. I've got some weather and then we'll cut directly into the local weather for you. But this is from the Weather Channel.
The pumpkin spice lattes. We're finally getting a digging in of a trough into the west. That's right. Snow on the way, but only for very high elevations. Everyone else is going to be cold rain. So rain boots also on the ready because you're going to have a wet couple of days here. So this digs as it heads east. We are going to see that influx of cold air right out of Canada and the moisture goes right along with it. So this is your forecast for Thursday. We're talking about rain from Helena all the way south through Flagstaff, straight through Utah, and the Wasatch going to get some snow starting on Friday. We're also going to be watching across Colorado because you do have some cold rain on the way, but also some snow in the higher elevations, the Northern Rockies, Yellowstone, you're getting the snow as well. Look at these temperatures. Thursday, 58 degrees in Elko, take a look. Grand Junction, 66 degrees, which is 11 degrees below average for Friday. And Saturday, 13 degrees below average, a chilly 49 degrees in Jackson Hole. These are the snow amounts. Okay, so it's not significant. We're not looking at, like, hey, major ski weather. But I know that all of our winter sports enthusiasts are getting amped up that it's even in the forecast.
All right, and that is on snow coming in, and then here is on some pretty serious flooding in the Midwest.
That's a major flash flooding happening in Minnesota on Wednesday. That car is up to its doors in water. When you look inside, you can even see the electrical panel failing from all that water. Flooding has been a major concern over the past 24 hours, and it's not just for Minnesota. It's for parts of northern Iowa and Wisconsin as well. This is all courtesy of cold front. Look at these impressive rain totals, close to 10 inches in Maple Grove. We've seen over 7 inches in parts of central Wisconsin. Actually, Wisconsin, I-61, they had a mudslide yesterday due to all the rain. More rain is on the way today. Flooding still going to be the major concern. So we are going to see more showers fire up later today. They are going to dump additional rainfall that's only going to add to the flooding threat that we're seeing. So in parts of southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, we could pick up 2 to 3 inches. And look at the La Crosse area where they've seen close to 10 inches. They could have another inch of rain.
In terms of the shooting, here is what a Ohio police chief said about it.
An Ohio police chief took to Twitter to condemn the Tulsa cop who fatally shot an unarmed black man. Middleton, Ohio police chief Rodney Muttersbaugh spared the officer no sympathy with a post that quickly made its rounds on social media. As an officer, I'm so sick and drained of some cops doing things like this. You're making us all look bad. Stop, read the tweet, which has been shared thousands of times before he made his account private. Muttersbaugh later tweeted that, "Life is precious, man. Sorry we don't all agree. Compassion and empathy is eternally important. Just sick of seeing death and hate." The Ohio top cop was reacting to the fatal shooting of 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tulsa police officer Buddy Shelby fired a single fatal gunshot at Crutcher while she investigated his idling SUV in the middle of a street. Crutcher, who was unarmed, is seen in the video of the shooting with his back to officers and his hands in the air. Muttersbaugh said he has been in similar scenarios as Shelby, but hasn't resorted to using lethal force. Said he will use the Tulsa shooting as an opportunity to retrain officers on his force.
All right, so I just have a feeling that they're going to have a hard time justifying that one. We have Ben Rossin right around the corner. I want to thank also Massage Asia for sponsoring the show. And it is at 3850 Foothills Road. That's 222-4945, 222-4945. Let Frankie Fingers use his massage techniques to bring you to heaven, to paradise, a full body massage and a foot massage. Two options, and there are radio specials. So ask about the radio special on the Massage Asia ad that we're doing here. Anyway, 6:59, and we'll take you out with a little bit more Duke Ellington. A bottomless well of brilliant music. We'll be right back with Ben Rossin. 6:59 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. KOBE. Thank you. Well, 7:06, it is the 22nd and September, of course, and we're moving along in the year. 70 degrees outside right now, and we have Ben Rawson in. And Ben missed last week. He was doing babysitting and such things. His wife was out of town. But so we're going to have an open topic show today on the Rawson Report, whatever you want to ask about, whatever you're concerned about or would like us to mention. In the meantime, we will be covering some topics as well. Good morning, Ben, and thanks for coming back.
Absolutely. Good morning, Kelly.
How's it going?
Real well. It's a beautiful day outside. This time of year is just so wonderful out here in this area as we get some great weather and just some great temperatures as well out there.
Anything you want to cover? There was a county meeting, and I had a guy call up, and he had mentioned that you weren't there, and he had, I don't know if he was coming up with a conspiracy theory or it's Jeff. I said when you came back, you would explain what was going on.
Well, Kelly, you know, there was a county commission meeting last week, a very important meeting, as it turns out, as they voted on the contract extension for Julia Brown. I was not at the meeting. I had a family situation that came up, and I was not able to make it. I did let the chairman know I wasn't going to be there well ahead of the meeting, perhaps too far ahead. I let him know that I wasn't going to be there. But, you know, Kelly, it is only the second regular county commission meeting that I've missed in my just over 3 years on the commission. And
well,
so
obviously you're very devoted, and I know that recently Wayne Hancock had flown back home to Carpetbagger City, Florida, and missed some meetings.
Yeah, I think my attendance record is better than
anybody.
Three of the other commissioners. David Garcia has a very good record as well. I think he's only missed one meeting, so the two of us are the ones that have been there on the most regular basis.
So you said that you let him know too far ahead. Is that why he scheduled the vote?
Well, you know, Kelly, there's you hate to
go ahead and say I'll say it, you dirty rat, Billy.
You know, I think there's oftentimes some gamesmanship that's taken place if you know that a commission is not going to be at a meeting, and I don't know what happened there, Kelly, but I am disappointed they decided to give Julia Brown a three-year contract extension with a 10% pay raise each year. And then there's also an increase from the current two-month severance clause in her contract to a six-month severance clause. So if the new commission decides to terminate her contract for any reason, they would pay her a buyout of close to $80,000.
Wow. I was told by somebody that she got a D- or the equivalent of a D- in her review, and therefore I'm surprised that they did a, you know, re-upped her.
Well, Kelly, that the evaluation of the county manager was done in closed session, I'm not real comfortable commenting on that.
All right. So anyway, more Julia Brown. I'm sure Kiki will be thrilled.
You know, I hope that things calm down next year and that there's a better working relationship with the sheriff's department, that we're all working together for the public. I think that's what we need to be doing and stopping some of the political bickering that's been going on back and forth.
All right. So what are some issues that lie ahead for the county commission?
Well, of course, one of the big issues that's coming up here in about, 6 weeks now is the election. I want to encourage everyone to get out and vote, learn about their candidates. There's two county commission races that are contested, districts 4 and 5. And my personal preferences in those two districts would be Kim Hakes in district 5. And then in district 4, Isabella Solis will be the best candidate there in that race. And I think that's important for people to realize that one of those is a Democrat, Isabella is a Democrat, and Kim is a Republican. And it's not always about party. It's about who can do the best job as a commissioner.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've just had so much, I don't know what else you would call it, but so much chaotic leadership And this is progressivism at its worst in this county. You know, we don't have a functional economy, and they're doing things to devalue the land.
They sure are. That's the Unified Development Code, and that's another thing that's very important. The commission will likely be taking a vote on that before the end of the year as they try to push that through before a new commission is seated.
Well, I don't know what to say about that, except that, you know, this is a hard, you know, farming is a hard way to make a living. And mm-hmm. this is, you know, this is a tough place to farm because we got to import the water. So anything that takes away value from the land for some pie in the sky leftism, some globalism or whatever, I'm totally opposed to.
I think it'll be important for. If any listeners out there are not aware of the Unified Development Code, you need to be following it. You need to take a chance to read it, talk to people that understand it, and get involved, because that's a 20-year planning document that will have significant impacts on the future of our county.
And I was informed by another attorney that who was looking into the matter that the property value could fall by half.
Yeah, I don't know the exact amount, but when you take specifically ag land that currently can be used for residential development and say that now it can't be, that has a significant change in the value of the land. And you take a small farmer out there that may have 8 acres that they've bought with the goal of subdividing it when they retire, and that's their retirement plan, you've just taken that away from them.
Well, I was also informed that these purchase agreements or the mortgage that you would take out on this would end up being worth more than the land in a lot of cases. So what's the farmer supposed to do?
It sure puts the farmer in a bad spot.
All right, folks, we'll take a little break here. More Duke Ellington, Kelly O'Connell with Ben Ross, and the Rossin Report is back and better than ever. 713 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180-2 text. We'll be right back. It's Kelly.
Hello. I was listening to Commissioner Rossin.
Yes.
And just wanted to, you know, he made the comment about, you know, if we're not paying attention to that UDC code, that we should be.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to ask him, you know, how is it that we can, in rural communities where this is pretty much going to be impacting us, where the majority of the folks out here are Spanish speaking and read in Spanish, how important is it that that information from the UDC come out today?
Absolutely. That's a great point. What's your first name?
Arturo.
Arturo, can I put you on hold and we'll bring you on the air in about a minute and a half?
Yeah, I wish I could. I was just in between and I just wanted to see if you could maybe just ask him that question. I would normally, sir, but I just don't have the time right now. But I did think it was an important question.
Okay, Arturo, thank you. Have a good day.
Would you ask him, though?
He's sitting right here. He heard you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
I don't know. I kind of, it's like, why do you bother calling and not go on the air? If you're going to call and say something, go on the air.
What a puss.
He's the one that ran against Billy Garrett in the Democrat primary.
Doesn't surprise me. I met that guy. I had that guy on the show. You know, Hake.
They're builders.
Yep.
I'm saying to him, and so we really want to get them on regular meetings. So how about, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch your back. I said, consider what it's going to be. For the big brothers, I said, his name is.
You know, I,
and you're the only one who's really coming to get back to the course. It's just something that everybody has got to have to be, you know.
Oh, you told him?
Yeah.
What do you want to get in?
Yeah, let's answer that question. And I'll probably take off.
Okay. We are back, and we just had a call from Arturo, and Arturo brought up something that was very important, and I think Ben immediately reacted to it. You're bringing in a plan in English to change the rules, the land right rules, property rights in the county, and there's a lot of people out in the county who are farmers who are just Spanish speakers. What can we do about that?
You know, Kelly, I think it's important when you hear people talk about the Unified Development Code and the comprehensive plan, they're quick to point out that there have been hundreds of meetings, all these people have been involved, but these meetings have all occurred before there was a document for them to look at. The version 6, draft 6 of the document went from 270 pages to 470 pages, and there have not been hundreds of meetings after that actually looking at the document. And I think what Arturo is pointing out is they had these meetings at the beginning where they brought people up for the meeting from the colonias. They paid them. They paid them gas. They fed them. All of this to show that all these people were behind it. And yet now when the document's ready, they don't make it available to those people that they paraded out and showed that these are the people that are supporting it. And so I think that's a disservice if you're going to do that, not to have the document available in Spanish. You know, with that being said, Kelly, that the Unified Development Code is an interesting animal, being as large as it is. It does replace some other documents, some other codes as well. But it makes a significant change in the development patterns of Doñana County. Currently, in my district, some of the areas that I represent, Talavera, Las Alturas, those areas are only residential. There's no commercial out there. There's no industrial. And with the Unified Development Code, the emphasis is on going to 10-acre villages. And so instead of having areas that are just residential, you're going to end up with mixed-use parcels where you have residential and commercial together, where you have low density and high density together, and everything put together in one area. That's not been proven to be a successful way to develop in Doñana County or in the West, for that matter. So I think it's a very significant change in the way we've done business at the county, and I do hope people get involved.
Well, you know, I wouldn't feel as strongly as I do because I'm not opposed to having a plan for the future, but the fact that the mayor signed up this city for ICLIA, which is the political wing of Agenda 21, and the fact that the people that are pushing this are far leftists. And I think all of these guys are on the same page. Ken Miyagashima told people, from what I understand, and Ken, if this is, I know you're listening, if this is not correct, you feel free to call in and disabuse us of this, but has told people to their face, we live in a no growth area. And this is what the kind of things that you do politically or legislatively or through the rules to keep an area from growing.
That's right, Kelly. And then, and that's a big point of what this Unified Development Code is doing. You know, Kelly, come January, we're still going to have a Democrat County Commission. We'll still have either three or four Democrats on the commission. With that being said, if this was such a good plan, sell it to the next commission. But instead of trying to do that, they're trying to push it through on this commission instead of selling it to the voters. And I think that's disappointing, Kelly.
And that is after the, it's these people have been rejected by the electors.
That's right. You know, I think it's important to note there that the Democrat Party ousted both the chairman and the vice chairman of the county commission in the Democratic primary. And that is unheard of in a primary to oust two leadership incumbents like that. And so I think it's clear the voters want a different direction on the commission.
And Billy Garrett is out.
Billy Garrett has two more years to serve, and then he will not be eligible for reelection. He's on the same cycle I am, so I'll be running for reelection in 2 years, but he will not be eligible to because of term limits.
Who is now that Wayne Hancock is leaving, who's going to take over running the commission?
You know, Kelly, that's a good question. We're going to have three new commissioners on there. So I would assume that either Billy Garrett or myself would be the chairman next year, just because you typically don't having someone come fresh in that hasn't been a part of it is probably not the easiest thing to do. It's running those meetings is not simple. So I would assume that one of the two of us would be, but it'll really be up to the three incoming commissioners and how much change they want to see. It could be that they want to see, you know, one of them take over and be the chair. We'll see what happens.
All right. Now, switching gears here a little bit, what is the most common question or complaint that you get as a commissioner, day in, day out?
Well, Kelly, by far the biggest question that I usually get is, what does a county commissioner do? And that's even from people that have been here and are registered to vote. You know, a lot of people just don't understand what the different role of commissioners and city councilors and how it all works. So that would be the biggest question. And the county commission is responsible for the county budget. We're responsible for the budget for the sheriff's department, the detention center, roads, dams, infrastructure that we have, and also policy decisions. So those are some of the things that we deal with on a regular basis.
And we do have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Jesse.
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. This is who?
Can you hear me?
No, I had
this
the...
This is
Neil?
No, this is Jesse.
Jesse, hey, thanks for calling back in, and what's going on? Jesse, are you there? Hello? Call back, Jesse. We lost you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay, so I've been listening to the Rossi Report and the whole discussions and everything else for quite a while, and it seems to me like the county commissioners, they may not have like a standard operating procedure of what needs to be done in certain areas. Is that correct? Or let me say why. You know, when you had somebody that was, you know, just given another 3-year contract and gets a 10% raise per year, and it's not tied back to performance, it almost sounds like it's like, you know, pulled out of your leg at the last minute, and that's what happened. And there's no process or rules or regulations or anything else that says, hey, if the person is doing not good work, maybe a 1% or a 5% pay increase or whatever. But it doesn't seem like there's any processes in place for how the commission is supposed to operate. Am I correct or am I wrong?
Well, Jesse, you make an excellent point there, and there is no there's no requirement on how we do that. So the commission can decide to do it any way they want, and unfortunately, this is the way they've decided to do it. You know what, Jesse, I've made it clear before that I'm a fan of 1-year contract extensions. The county manager needs to make sure they're doing their job every year, and not, you know, a 3-year contract extension, especially with a 6-month payout, is not appropriate.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying Ms. Brown deserves it or not or whatever. I'm just saying that it seems to me that the county commissioner doesn't have any processes or SOPs or, you know, procedures in place. Another example is like the rainy day fund. There should be some constraints as to how you can use that rainy day fund, but it seemed like people were using it, you know, ad hoc, whatever they wanted. Am I wrong?
You are absolutely right, Jesse, and I think that's an important point that you make, because a lot of that rainy day fund came from the sale of the county city-owned hospital, Memorial Hospital, that was sold. And that's where a lot of that money came from. It was set aside to be used for indigent care. And instead of using it for indigent care, Jesse, they've just used it to balance the budget each year.
Yeah, it seems to me that maybe what the county commissioners and other people should do is actually start putting, you know, procedures in place that actually hold and, you know, give to the government or the people, hey, this is how we're doing things. If we're not doing it this way, then we're not doing it the right way. But right now, it seems like it's a brand new corporation, and they're just learning the processes, but they've been around for years.
Well, and Jesse, I think that's one of the reasons that Kim Hakes would be such a great commissioner, and kind of to put a plug in for him here. You know, he's been in the banking industry and dealt with large organizations with large budgets, understands the importance of having some organizational structure and standard operating procedures and ways to do things. He was also the chairman of MMC, the hospital, back when it was still county owned. And so he's got a lot of things that will be a benefit to the county if he is elected to serve on the commission with me next year.
Yeah,
or in November.
I guess as my last, because I'm getting ready to fall off, I'm getting ready to go to work, but it seems to me that if there's none of these processes in place and the commissioner or the elected officials are kind of like doing everything ad hoc, last minute, you know, to even include like, you know, voting on a county manager, you know, if X amount of people can't be there, then it's going to be taken off the calendar. But unless there's procedures and those are in place, then the American people or the people start losing, you know, confidence in their commissioners that they're actually doing it the right way instead of just, you know, last minute kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know,
anyway, that's all I had. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess. But I, you know, let's just get your response on this, Ben. It reminds me of what's happening nationally. There's no accountability. There's a lot of dissatisfaction with decision making, short term, long term. And there is a sense that the elites or the leadership is totally unmoored. Their pod has been ejected from the ship and we're free falling on our own, and that they couldn't be more thrilled. And, you know, you've got this ideological decision making that has proven time and again to create crisis and chaos and failing economies and separating people from their property. And yet, you know, the local people act like they're here. What are those grants? Those Guggenheim grants? They're genius. They're here on genius grants. You know, this guy comes out of Florida to come and lead us into just total destruction. I can't help but feel like there is a crisis of leadership that is going across the country. It's both national and local, and we're experiencing it here local. It is people who believe that they have a messianic call to save the world, and they're going to do it. They're going to misuse our local community to do that.
You're right, Kelly, and I think the voters here have understood that, you know, and that's why, again, you see the chairman and the vice chairman both lose their reelection bid. I think that was a very clear message that the voters wanted to go a different direction. Yet, instead of recognizing the will of their constituents and understanding the frustration of their constituents, instead of offering a short extension to the county manager, they've given a 3-year extension, and that takes it out of the hands of the next commission. And then we'll see what they do in 2 months with the Unified Development Code, a 20-year plan and see if they approve that as well, instead of allowing the new commissioners who have been chosen by their constituents to represent them an opportunity to be heard.
Well, they're obviously not into representational government, or they wouldn't be hiding the meetings and hiding the menu of what's going to be on the meeting. And having it in firehouses as opposed to the meeting hall, and they do it in the evening instead of the day. I mean, it's just, anyway, I mean, these people think they're so smart, and they're just repeating the failures of socialism through history.
I couldn't say it better, Kelly.
All
thanks
right.
for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, Ben, and glad to have Ben back for the Rossin Report, and we'll have him next week. Once again, 732 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. And what's going on at the Builder Supply?
Well, you know, Kelly, with the cooler weather, we're seeing more people having their windows open and being able to enjoy the weather. We're getting a lot of replacement screens, so if you've got screens that you need to get replaced or rescreened, bring them by to Rossin Builder Supply. We'd be glad to get you taken care of.
Now, how about a door front or back that has a screen on it so that you can open the hard door and leave the screen door open and not have any insects come in?
We have those in stock, and we can even special order something very special for you if you've got something in mind.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Thank you.
Folks, and we'll be right back. We're going to take on a little bit more of what's in the media cycle right now, but it's a real pleasure to get Ben back here. And Kelly O'Connell at 7:33. We will be back in just a moment. All right, so time for weird news. Didn't get into it yesterday. Tallahassee police. Remember, at least half of weird news happens in Florida. Remember my warning about that? Tallahassee police arrest man for pouring semen. And I don't mean Navy people. For pouring semen on women. A man was arrested in Tallahassee after he poured semen on a woman while she was eating dinner with a friend. Tallahassee police arrested Patrick Bruce. And the incident occurred on September 12th around 7:30. The victim told police that the suspect was staring at her while she was eating and studying with her friend at the Panera Bread on Ocala Road. The victim told police that Bruce sat next to her and stared at her for 10 minutes before walking to the bathroom. Police said that Bruce left the restaurant and returned with a cup from Publix. Again, he walked into the bathroom at Panera and headed toward the women immediately. When he came out, police said Bruce tried to pour the cup on the victim's head. The victim told police that the substance spilled on her neck, shoulder, and left arm. After he poured the liquid on her, she told police he apologized for spilling his drink and left the restaurant. And once the victim said she realized that the liquid Bruce poured on her was semen, she began screaming at the top of her lungs while the manager of the store tried to go after Bruce. According to the probable cause documents, Panera employees told police that Bruce dropped his cell phone. TPD said that employees looked through the phone, the video showing Bruce while he was filling his cup in the bathroom. He made a video of it. Holy cow. They called his mom, and she said that he's schizophrenic and off his medication. I mean, that pretty much goes without saying. All right. More weird Florida news. South Florida man steals more than $45,000 worth of socks, according to police. Raydell Leon Fernandez faces burglary and grand theft charges. In Medley, Florida, a South Florida man was arrested last week when he stole more than $45,000 worth of socks from a Medley warehouse. And the 32-year-old man faces burglary and grand theft charges from the 2015 theft. They have him or on just a camera. And according to the arrest report, police noticed a car stopped in the middle of a railroad track in Medley and saw a man running from the nearby warehouses. And they followed him when he got in his car. During a search of the car, police found a hammer and several pairs of gloves in the trunk. And he's found on surveillance video. And he stole a tractor and attached it to his vehicle, and that was where the socks were at. And a little bit more weird news. Are you ready? If you're not sick to your stomach already, I got to warn you on this one. And I got a clip here if I can get it to play. What's an OMG? Woman orders spare ribs from Chinese restaurant, but claims she actually received dog paws. That'll give you pause. This is from the Mirror in the UK. Ash Jefferson posted a video of the social media claiming that the dog legs still had claws in them. OMG. A woman has claimed a Chinese takeaway restaurant served her dog paw after she ordered spare ribs from the menu. Ashley Jefferson was eating at the China Palace in Havre de Grace, Maryland. China Palace in Havre de Grace, Maryland. When she leaves, she made the horrific discovery. And I'm looking at it right now, and there are definitely nails coming out of the spare rib. Ashley Jefferson was eating. And then when she realized what it was, she had to fight the urge to throw up, get to the bathroom to record a Facebook video where she claimed the ribs still had claws attached. In the video, she said there's nails still in this. Those are claws. I'm definitely keeping one of these and taking them to the health department to have them tested. All you Chinese food lovers, I suggest you reevaluate your life before you end up choking on a dog nail. Oh, my gosh. and underneath shows where the paw pads are. Oh, my gosh. On September 15th, then she posted a picture on Facebook writing, I Googled a dead dog paw and took a pic of what they delivered to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but they look exactly the same. But the restaurant responded and said her claims were false. And a video has been going accusing us of using dog legs as spare ribs. However, this accusation is not true. And the video posted showed a piece of cartilage at the end of the ribs, which is not out of the ordinary, it claims. So, all right. So let's take a break here while you finish your breakfast. And Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. When only the best weird news stories will do, tune into AM Las Cruces on 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180-2TEXT. We will be right back. All right, continuation of Weird Wednesday, and so you wanted to hear that thing where she's describing that. I had to make sure there was no cursing on it. Here's the lady who took her prized spare ribs into the bathroom and discovered that they were not what it appeared. And this is from, like I say, the Daily Mail.
So, I ordered Chinese food today. And these are supposed to be a spare rib, and it's clearly a dog paw. You can see it. There's nails still on this. Oh, God, that's a dog paw, bro. Oh. They're not right for this at all. Look at the nail. Look at that. That's disgusting.
Huh. Interesting. And here is some more weird news. And this is right up there with anything weird you're going to hear about. A guy ran into somebody's house naked and died. And I'm seeing if I've got maybe a clip of this. But anyway, all right, naked man breaks into Florida home. Where did it happen? Weird news. It's Florida, of course. Naked man breaks into Florida home and attacks and bites three people before dying as he is restrained inside. Authorities in Ocala are investigating the death of a 40-year-old James Rains, who rained down bites on his victims. He allegedly broke into a home and attacked three people on Saturday. Deputies were called to the home around 4:30 a.m. and found Rains being held down by one of the people at the home. I wonder if he was Purple Rains by that point. He was unresponsive when deputies arrived and later died at a hospital. People at the home told deputies they believed Rains was under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Once again, a no doubt moment. And police in the North Florida County were investigating the incident. And when they arrived, he was naked and unresponsive. Poor little fella. And they are not sure what caused his death, but believed him to be under the influence. All right, let's take a little break here and come back and finish up with some more weird Wednesday news. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 to call in, 805-61802 text. All right, here's the lightning round. Weird Wednesday news. Switch to Thursday. Man who lost phone fleeing cops posts online, "Don't call me." Authorities in Pennsylvania say a drug suspect who dropped his cell phone while running away from police took to Facebook to warn his friends, don't call. Ricky, don't call my number. Lackawanna County detectives say 25-year-old Scranton resident James Lee Hankins fled when police tried to arrest him for undercover drug deals involving just a little bit of heroin and cocaine. And police say a woman who knew Hankins let them search her apartment and found it. And after he lost his phone, he got on Facebook and said, please don't be dumb. Don't call me. Lucky to be alive calf with two faces born at Kentucky farm. Visitors to central Kentucky may do a double take when they see the newest addition to this farm. Stan Cubbin of Campbellsville told WDRB-TV that he thought he had twins, but it was just a twin-faced calf. Female calf has two noses, two mouths, and four eyes. And though the middle two eyes don't function. Sounds like some of the women I've dated. But anyway, go to Kentucky if you want to see that. All right. Out of the wild, police chase bear through Alaska City. Young black bear led police on a two-hour chase through the streets of downtown Anchorage. I've been there myself, although I didn't see a bear. Scurrying down sidewalks and crossing lanes of traffic and even ducking behind a Pizza Hut along the way, he may have or she may have dialed in and picked it up within a half of an hour. And they finally picked it up. And everybody's safe. Mexican police say that a van with a cannon has been used to shoot drugs into the United States. Drug smugglers got real creative on this one. They used a van outfitted with a 10-foot, 3-meter air cannon to shoot projectiles into the United States. Mexican federal police say in a statement last week, they found the van parked on a street in Agua Prieta, Mexico, along the border with Douglas, Arizona. And U.S. Border Patrol spokesman Vicente Paco said Tuesday agents regularly see numerous methods used to smuggle. And the most common is lobbing softball-sized marijuana packages over fences. But now, with their new air cannon, they can shoot a lot more. These drug shooters, can get stuff as high as 26 feet. And the truck's laden with marijuana, shooting these over the border. All right. Horse named Mercy, freed from septic tank by rescue workers. And officials say animal rescue workers have freed a horse that fell into a septic tank hole in central Florida. Where? Florida, of course. Local media outlets report that Mercy, a 24-year-old quarter horse, fell through the tank's fiberglass cover Tuesday morning behind a home in Bunnell, Florida. Rescue workers from Flagler in St. Johns County spent about 3.5 hours working to free her. And Jennifer Lockwood, lead veterinarian at Shelton Veterinary Clinic, told Daytona Beach News Journal that Mercy sustained minor cuts and scrapes on her left shoulder and knee. And they'll put a little medicated salve on her, but she is good to go. And teen hospitalized after air freshener causes car explosion. This is in Germany. A teenager who believed his car smelled much like cheese, although I wonder what kind of cheese he's talking about, sprayed so much air freshener in his car that when someone turned on a light and opened the door, it caused an explosion and it blew the vehicle's large glass sunroof off. And the teen was hospitalized with burns to both arms and legs. All right. Creepy clown. Creepy bozos haunting woods are making life hard for real clowns. And this is in Montfort, or pardon me, the clown who's complaining about this is Kelly Montfort. And the next time he gets a gig, he's going to call the police and tell them exactly where he's going to be, because Montfort, who performs under the name of Mr. Twister, lives a half hour from Greenville, South Carolina, where reports of menacing folks in clown outfits in the woods trying to lure kids into the woods have been frequently reported to the police. And Montfort said he's been a professional clown since 2008. And I walked into an event recently over the Labor Day weekend in a bright colored hat and vest, and one of the first things someone said, "Oh my God, it's a clown, it's a clown," in a frightened way. And now he's worried that he's going to lose his occupation or even trigger a 911 call just by walking down the street and honking at people, I would assume. And the so-called creepy clown sightings are not confined to Greenville. There have been reports of these out-of-control bozos, and one even armed in North Carolina and Ohio. One of them had a machete, I believe. So it's enough to make a grown clown cry. All right, let's see if there's anything else that I can squeeze in here. Virginia mom shares video of spider found inside toddler's banana. I might have one more. Well, I already told you that 40% of Japanese adults are virgins. Yeah, all right. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. We're running out of time here. Oh, James Wood, famous actor, not going to watch the NFL anymore because of Black Lives Matter is being promoted there. And they say that NFL business could be down up to 40% right now because of this. People's being upset. Anyway, thanks for tuning in today. Really appreciated it. And I hope you have a wonderful day, and we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a great one. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Have a wonderful day. Ciao. KOBE.